And we are live. Welcome to Iron Rations with Joe the Lawyer.
Hey guys, how are you?
And myself, your bartender in the OSR, Eric Tenkar. Welcome to your Friday night Iron Rations.
We are here and we've all eaten, so I don't know why we need the rations, but we're
when it comes to iron rations, I might actually prefer the beef jerky over the hardtack. I mean, it just has a little bit more flavor, although maybe the hardtack has more nutritional value. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing about beef jerky now with our age and high blood pressure. You got to watch that salt, man. Iron rations kill us now.
Dude, I actually have found salt-free beef jerky on Amazon. Really? And let me just tell you flat out, it pretty much sucks as bad as it sounds.
Yeah, it sounds like the sole of a shoe. I mean, what the hell kind of,
actually, to tell you the truth, I suspect it is pretty much what adventurers eat to stay alive in their dungeon. It would be like, it's going to give me the runs, but you'll still have my protein. So, yeah.
That does too. That does pretty much clean you out too, man. That's some nasty shit. No pun intended. Nasty shit. So we got a good topic today, I think. We're completely stealing it from somebody else's YouTube channel, which is the best way of. I guess it's the best compliment we could give. Stealing,
right? Well, why don't you tell the folks what YouTube channel we are stealing it from?
Yeah, Nerdarchy. NERDARCHY. And we're not stealing at all because they have 127,000 subscribers. Not at all. We're trying to leech off of those subscribers. No, not at all.
And to tell you the truth, it's an inspirational topic.
It is. It's really interesting. It's interesting. The topic is what happened to the dungeons in Dungeons & Dragons. I think they titled it No Dungeons & Dungeons & Dragons. So, yeah.
Right.
It's an interesting topic because it's been a big shift lately, you know? I've been last, 10, 15 years, I think. You can say it's the second edition, right? I mean, that's pretty much
pretty much, which actually, believe it or not, is like 20 years. But, it's funny. I want to break out into a Peter, Paul, and Mary song. Where have all the dungeons gone?
Oh, God, are you drinking already?
I've got my proper 12 right here.
There you go.
But I also have my hop tea. So it's not like I'm having my whiskey with a beer chaser.
So you're balancing.
Yeah, I'm balancing it with it. Yeah, yeah. It could have been seltzer, but I'm going with a carbonated, calorie-free hoppy tea drink, I guess.
Yeah, that works.
But yeah, I know when we were talking about this, that's what, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like I was thinking, where have all the flowers gone? It's like, no, where have all the dungeons gone? I should cover that like a beatnik. Where have or William Shatner? Where have all the dungeons gone? Long time passing.
Yeah.
Where have all the dungeons gone? Many editions ago. And I think therein lies a big crux of the matter. As we were discussing before the show, when I started gaming back in about 1980, roughly, graph paper wasn't cheap. It isn't now where you can like. You can buy paper on Amazon and basically have enough to self-publish your own, I don't know, rule book for years.
Yeah.
But for next to nothing. It graph paper was hard to find. You had to go to a hobby shop. You couldn't go down to your dollar store. There weren't dollar stores.
No.
And
it's pharmacy, maybe if you got lucky.
Maybe if you got lucky because they were selling school supplies.
Yeah.
Hey, we got Rob Conley in the room.
Rob, hey, Rob, what's up, buddy? What's up, man?
But since it was that important, you squeezed everything you could into that sheet of graph paper, and even the computer side of role playing games back then, Might and Magic, Bard's Tale, it was usually a graph like 100 by 100. For each level, and if or 50 by 50 or whatever it was, and if there was a box on that map that wasn't detailed, that wasn't accounted for, you knew without a shake, if anything, that you're missing something. You skipped something. It wasn't like it was being used to support other levels. It wasn't like it was like, oh, an engineering decision that we need these pillars. Mm-hmm. No, it was done because otherwise you're wasting space.
Exactly, and you're wasting money on paper. Paper wasn't cheap, and photocopies weren't cheap. And yeah, so you're basically, and the other thing too is like you wanted to fill it all in because you wanted to make it as entertaining as you can for your room, as much as you can. It wrote on both sides, so you wrote light so that the ink wouldn't go through. And then if you were a player and you saw that square, that you knew there was a secret door, but the elf couldn't find it, you broke out your freaking sledgehammer and crowbar and just went to town because there's got to be one there, right?
Right. And obviously that's where the big treasure, the big get is hidden behind. It's in that room. So again, when we were younger in our earlier gaming days, that's the dungeons that you expected. And yes, I know that the DMG was written to say things like, smart players will avoid monsters because the vast majority of experience points is gained by treasure. But let's be realistic. Did your players, Joe, did your group have more fun avoiding encounters or fighting encounters?
We wanted to kill them. I mean, we wanted to fight. And I still play like this today. I still do. I mean, and not for nothing, but 5e's, they could get XP for killing shit. But Rob Connolly just made a comment. Joe had an interesting experience with a dungeon recently, because that proves your point. I'm a wizard. I'm running through the dungeon. I dropped the fireball on a bunch of guys, and Rob's using roll 20 and the lighting thing. So I guess I didn't see a guy. I thought I killed him or whatever. And I'm like, all right, they're all softened up. I'm going to run ahead of the fighters in the group and blast my burning hands and polish them off like a badass, even though I'm a fucking magic user, you know, wizard in 5e. I go in there and they lay me out like 15 attacks around this guy I had that I didn't see coming. Bam, 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 bam. Next thing I'm done, I'm in death save land. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I have one of the NPCs drags me out. I'm like, holy shit. So yeah, Rob, and I've named my guy Radovic the Second, because Radovic the First, if you remember, Eric had a similar experience. He dove into a window in Tim's game, and the guy got killed. So yeah, so I'm just gonna keep like George Foreman names his kids the same name. Radovic the First, Radovic the Second. So yeah, you still like to fight. Who likes to play it safe and like a little wimp, right? So yeah, you want to get in there, you want to fight, even though you don't get all the XP from the kill, because who likes the tale? I snuck by the thing and took his gold, or I beat the shit out of him and took all his stuff. You know what I mean? So
right.
The Conan, hear the lamentations of the women, and you know, drive your enemies before you. You know.
Now, Brian McIntosh, a lot of the 8.5x11 dimensional dungeons were drawn in the '80s, and that's true. And listen, there was, shortly after I started blogging. When I say shortly, I've been doing blogging for about a dozen years, so probably 2 or 3 years after I started. Eldrick Entertainment, was a company put together by, I believe, Chris Clark and Tim Kask and Frank Metzner and a few others to publish stuff. And they weren't using the OGL. They were using their own fake system, kind of like Judge's Guild used. And Frank put together, I think it was Forest of Doom Dungeon or something like that. And it literally was one of those, I don't know, whatever the scale was, like 30 by 30, where every piece of that grid is fucking used, and it's a perfect square. And I commented even back then that this is the type of dungeon that we used to play in the 80s, but it's not something that we're looking forward to playing now. And even before we delve into other reasons why, isn't our sensibilities have changed? Is it that we expect, like, well, we know that dungeons need support, so there should be. You're going to have to retain an area. If you just dig out a whole area 1,000 feet wide by 1,000 feet wide with just these plaster and stone walls supporting it, it'll collapse on itself. Did we think about that?
Yeah,
no, or is it? No. Nah,
I mean, where's the toilet? You want to get down to it back then? Nobody gave a shit what a York stuck of crap, you know?
well, and if they did, usually it was, well, you had a hole somewhere and it was a refuse hole because there's like an. And 30 feet down, there's an Odiok that just lives in this 10 by 10 chamber dug out to eat all the dungeon refuse.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, huh? And I always assumed that most quote professional dungeons back in those days usually had a water source running through it. So I always figured that they took the drinking water from the upstream and then downstream they just
yeah.
used it as a running toilet and garbage receptacle. But
we never thought about it because we were kids and we weren't sophisticated and we just wanted to have fun with our buddies and drink our soda and eat our chips. And if we're lucky, we got a pizza and we had fun and we played for goddamn 15 hours a day. Right. And that was it. So we just kept playing and playing and playing all day long. And so it didn't matter that the dungeon was a million rooms because goddamn it, we're going to do that on a Saturday. And if we have to Sunday as well.
Right. You know? And a big thing about it back then too was, we didn't have problems with 10 by 10. Why are all these 10 by 10 rooms? How did a young adult dragon squeeze itself and its horde into a 10 by 10 room? It didn't have to make sense. It had its own internal dimensions and that's what struck it. And the game has changed over the years, but before we get into that, isn't any confined place of adventure a dungeon? Ruins, castles, hideouts, temples, shrines, palaces. You're leaving out caves, John, for shame. Surely those are still common, or does it have to be sufficiently big to count as a dungeon? And I would say, it probably has. And I'm not talking mega dungeon. Yeah. We've had the arguments of what constitutes a mega dungeon. And
there's no answer.
Right. It's kind of like, what is the OSR? Yeah. What does the OSR even stand for? I've heard, and it's a valid argument, that a mega dungeon is a dungeon that is so large you will never finish it.
Yeah, so at least forever. It will finish you. You won't finish it, or you get bored with it and go somewhere else. Right? I mean, that's the gist. But I don't think that. Yeah, I mean, when you call it a dungeon, it's usually something underground. We go in room to room, whoop some ass, and I think it generally has to be big, or else I guess this goes back again, to that old, what is porn? I don't know, but I know it when I see it. Right?
Right.
It's like you kind of know a dungeon when you see it. Otherwise, it's just an encounter area, I think they might call it nowadays, right? It's just an encounter map or something that you upload real quick, map on Roll20.
Well, I think an encounter map is usually either an outdoor, or if it's an indoor encounter, it's like, a small crypt, 3 to 5 rooms. And now, with 3 to 5 rooms, does that constitute a dungeon? I don't know. I would hazard a guess, since we're talking out of our ass on this one, this will show you the show prep that Joe and I did. We're really sandboxing this one right now.
Yep.
I would go so far as to argue that to be a legitimate quote dungeon, you either need to have multiple levels, or if you are one level, it has to be a sufficient size that there are definable sections to the area. In other words, you have one area that is obviously controlled by the goblins, and then maybe the other area is the two bugbears have these like 3 or 4 rooms as their lair. A dungeon has to have more than just a handful of rooms and a single counter. Not that it isn't important, but that's always been my way to look at it. Or even a different way to look at it is a dungeon probably takes more than one session.
That's what Vauban 666 just said. Anything large enough to warrant 2 trips would be a dungeon. I think that's a good summary. You go in, you kick ass, get your ass kicked, you leave, you heal up, you go back. I think that's a good way to look at it. And does it have to be underground? I don't think so. I mean, it's just has to have rooms. And it can't be an outdoor area. It's either outdoor or it's a closed in area, I think really is the definition of it, right? So where it's underwater, I guess. But yeah, so as long as it's something with walls and you've got to knock down doors and or caves or something like that, and you have to recoup and recuperate and resupply and then go back in. Yeah, I think that's kind of a dungeon. Otherwise, it's just a place where you do one fight. It's a one map fight. But yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, now this begs the question of, because we're old and most of our viewers are probably old, and so we're thinking about the old days, right? And so it's an edition thing too, because this is not to start an edition war, because we all know 4th edition sucked. But
and it's funny because even those that I've talked to that defend 4th edition, they're like, "Oh, 4th edition was a great game." Like, really? It's like, "Oh yeah, it really was. It wasn't really an RPG, but it was a great game." If you like, and it's like even they have to admit that 4th edition really wasn't D&D as we know. And, but now
tactics or something, yeah.
Right, but yeah, D&D tactics. Yeah. But the reason why, and this is kind of like the elephant in the room, the powers that be at Wizards of the Coast saw what happened with third edition, the open game license, the SRD, and they were like, oh shit, well, we can't put this genie back in a bottle, but let's move to a new genie, lock it down. And people were like, well, what about having an OGL? We're going to do a game system license, which really meant that you are stuck with our restrictions. It isn't open. It is literally confines of a license. And look how well that didn't do them very well at all. I remember Goodman, I think, published two issues of the Level Up magazine at the time, the fourth edition. And that was it. Of course, my headset just...
I noticed that. Yeah, I'm picking up myself there. But again, not to be a fourth edition word, I was just a segue to get to some other point I wanted to make, was basically that I think the edition that you play, the newer editions, don't lend itself to big old dungeons, because a combat used to take a hell of a lot quicker to do in older editions than it does in third, fourth, fifth, right? Or Pathfinder, any of those. Because there's so many different damn abilities and powers and shit you could do that an encounter now takes an hour, hour and a half. You know, and if you do a series of back-to-back encounters, you can knock out, you know, in a four-hour game session or 3 hours. But how old are we? We all go to bed by 10 or 11, right? So we get 3 or 4 hours, lucky. And then we're going to bed. And so if you're playing fifth edition or a later edition, and Pathfinder, third, X, whatever, then you're taking an hour per encounter. And so there's so much more to the game. I think there's a difference, is that we've gotten older and we've gotten more mature and we want more out of our games, and we have the capability to design more into our games. Therefore, you want the role play experience. You want the immersion into the world. You want all the aspects of D&D that were promised to us, but we never understood when we were kids. And so essentially what you're doing is you want to have all those little aspects to it. So you don't want to sit in a dungeon for like 500 rooms worth of shit, because you never get the other things, because the combats take years. Long way to say it.
Well, and that's it. Like, when we were playing, like, why do I enjoy Swords and Wizardry and Total Wizardry Light so much? Because it actually plays quicker than AD&D 1E plays for me. While I'm getting the same enjoyment out of it, and that quicker play allows for more encounters. When I'm talking about quick play, I'm talking about combat. Because generally speaking, what slows down your game? It's the combat.
Mm-hmm.
So every edition of the game has gotten more and more complicated when it comes to combat. Now, not that they weren't complicated game systems back when we were playing. You could certainly play Chartmaster. I mean, Rollmaster. And, spend, 2 hours, playing out one combat and finding that half your party is missing limbs, and but you won.
You're walking out without an eye or ears, and you're crippled, and but you win the game. Good job. How heroic of you.
And even when it came to things like AD&D, what was the first thing when you house ruled AD&D? What was the first thing you usually house ruled then?
Initiative.
Well, all right. I'm not talking about weapon speed. And
all that stuff.
weapon versus armor adjustment and segments and plus options. But when it came to, I'm adding something new, not taking stuff out, adding something new. You added critical hits and fumbles.
Usually,
You were trying to make that combat more meaningful, deeper, whatever. Mm-hmm. So every edition of the game has tried to make combat, I don't want to say more fun or more viable, but more powerful. Even with 1E, what was the first thing that Unearthed Arcana did when you were like, oh my God, weapon specialization, double weapon specialization. I can take a bow and I can do point blank damage with a bow. This is combat's always the thing that we spinal tap, right? We say, like, this one goes to 11. Mm-hmm. And I think that is part of the issues and problem. Like, you play I'm sorry for scratching my nose. My allergies are killing me. You play 5e, and part of the slowdown of 5e is that there's a lot of stuff that's defined by rules that before was covered by DM Fiat. But it's also that combat has a lot more decisions that you have to make and a lot more fiddly bits. And it's what they kind of did what Hackmaster 4E did when Kentico got the 2E license. Mm-hmm. They upped the hit points of everything. Mm-hmm. Make
it longer. And look at the AC and hit points of third edition. Same thing. My brother just dropped in combat. He said a comment says, saying that combat slows the game down is like saying my trip to Disney sucked because all we did is go on rides. No, that's not the point. No. Yeah, the equivalent comparison would be, I went to Disney and I was there for an entire day and I only did 4 rides because each ride took 3 hours each. Where I wanted to get all the rides.
including the lines.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. If you run a combat in a system that has less rules bloat, all right, maybe that's an evil phrase for me to bring up. Maybe I shouldn't say that. But if you take a game that has less weight to the combat rules, and the combat allows you to resolve an encounter with 6 PCs versus 15 creatures, and you're done in 15, 20 minutes worth of 5e, that same encounter could take an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, big difference. Now, there's two ways to look at it. One, you can go, well, but that, you know, I had more combat time, and I had an hour and 15 of combat time. Yeah. But yeah, with that hour and 15, I could have run another 4 or 5 encounters, got further into the adventure. Yep.
Some could have been role play, some could have been sneak around, some could have been figure out the trap or the puzzle. Yeah, and so it's not a matter of the rides. If you enjoy the rides, yeah, but I wanted to enjoy more and different rides at Disney, not just the 4 I got to go on. I would have liked to enjoy the 10 of them, you know, that's and they're all different kind of rides, right? So that's the thing, I think. You've got to have a different it depends on your experience. If all you want to do is play combat shit like that, where they're all balanced and everything is easy, then you maybe do play 4E. You know, I don't know.
Right. I guess that's like every class gets +1 per level on all their abilities.
Yeah.
What? I can't be different. But Brian has a good point here. Nowadays most of my encounter areas we call lairs, and it's fewer than a dozen rooms or sub encounters, but they are detailed, and that's great. Again, you don't see too many mega dungeons being built with 5e in mind, and I'm not saying that they don't exist. Greg Gillespie's latest in the Baron Maze series, out of the box, is going to have a 5th edition version. However, it was written for old school role playing. It was written, I think, for Labyrinth Lord, or will be written for Labyrinth Lord, and the 5e is going to be a translation. And let's be honest with you, I'm going to give a great example. When you look at Frog God Games and you look at something like Rappin' Athok, and you go, all right, we had the Sword of Wizardry version, you had the Pathfinder version, you had the 5e version. Out of those three, which was the longest, the heaviest, biggest,
thickest book? Yeah, the 5e.
Pathfinder.
Yeah, okay. Pathfinder. I just saw that one.
Oh yeah, right. Pathfinder stats are ridiculous.
Yeah, that's true.
But 5e is still heavy with that, and 5e actually got its own new layout and font and a beautiful full color book because they really had to put so much work into it. They might as well make it a new offering and do it right. But that required. The balance, we talk about how you can take a 5th edition or a Pathfinder. I don't know about 4E. 4E doesn't convert well to any other edition. But 5E and Pathfinder, you can always take the power level and suck it down. You can bring it down to OSR. And you don't lose much in that translation.
Because the only thing is OSR doesn't care about balance, right? So it doesn't matter if it's underpowered, overpowered, or the later editions try to strike a balance, and we don't give a shit. So it's like, how do you convert a 5e to you know, a 5e 10 orc versus 4 PC encounter down to OSR? You just have 10 orcs versus 5 PCs, and it's easier or it's hard. We don't know until you get in there. You know what I mean? That's all it is. And if that one was too easy, then double the orcs next time. if you want to make it harder, you know, that's all it is. And so, yeah, so it's, I think that the time of combat, and the other thing too is where you get your XP. Cause like you said, you know, you do want to fight. You do want to fight, even though you don't get as much XP from the fighting as you get from the gold. But sometimes if you could avoid the fucking fight and get the 1,000 gold piece gem, you're going to do it, because why risk death? Right. So not always, but sometimes you do. So that does speed it up. Right. And so whatever you set your XP to be, you know, what gets you the XP, that does drive the players to a certain extent. Right. So whatever it is that drives the players is what they're going to do. And 5e is all about, you know, even though they give other rules for, you know, you get XP for accomplishing certain objectives or talking to somebody, the right person or whatever the hell it is, that's up to DM fiat. The only rules say XP equals monsters and everything else is up to the DM. So if you're just doing it as written with XP equals monsters, people are going to kill the monsters. Or the older editions, you got more for taking the gem than killing a monster. Sometimes you're going to do it. Not always, but sometimes.
Right. Well, and to be honest, yes, we kind of understood that there was more XP to be taken by treasure. We also figured out that selling off magic items that we weren't going to use immediately was probably better for, you know, leveling up quicker.
Yeah.
Like, oh, convert it to money. I could get 400 XP for only a plus one longsword, or I can get 2,000 gold pieces.
Yep.
2,000 XP split amongst the party. If we sell it, well, then I guess we're fucking selling that shit.
The days of magic stores in D&D. Does anybody still do that? Magic, I think, I know it was built into the Pathfinder rules that you assumed certain magic items at certain levels, at least first edition Pathfinder. And therefore, you had to like give the magic store at every town, village, or little hovel in the hills, because the players had a right to get the thing that makes them balanced with everything else, right? Or else they're going to be decimated. But I mean, I don't do magic stores anymore. Do you? Do you do something like that in your games?
Not really, but I guess, you know, if players can never really buy any magic aside from potions and maybe scrolls, but they certainly have, you know, like, I'd like to sell this. And I'm like, all right, who's actually going to buy a magic item? A magic item pawnbroker? I mean, you're not going to get full value, right? You're not maybe if you have guilds, it's like, well, all right, you got a magical sword, maybe you could sell it or trade it to somebody within the Fighters Guild who, you know, I'll be honest with you, that's just sometimes, depending on the group, it's just too much fiddly stuff. And you just go, all right, yeah. Well, your book value says 4,000. Well, the best you can get, give me a charisma roll. Yeah. All right, you roll average, right? The best you can get is like 3,200.
Yeah.
You know, that's, again, it's a DM fiat, a DM wave of the hand. It's not a perfect solution.
Yeah.
But
it works. You know, it gets rid of your shit. I mean, I like to keep a low magic game. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's the difference, you know. But Matt has a point here. Matt Jackson joined the group. Do you focus so much on XP as a kid? Did you focus so much on XP as a kid? My games never focused that on so much. We based it more on the adventure. Now we focus on the XP, man. All I wanted to do is become a, you know, you heard my last podcast 2 weeks ago. Level up, become a god. Starting a hovel, level up. At the end of my thing, I'm going to be a 35th level god of the world. Yeah, so we did focus on XP. That's all I wanted to do is become more powerful.
Rob Conley, 5e versus Classic Edition. Joe, you'll find out next campaign if we use Majestic Fantasy rules.
Yeah, I'm playing a Rob's game on Tuesdays, and it's fun. It's really, I mean, that's such a hell of a detailed world that he's been playing in for, 40 years? I don't know, but he's developed this thing. It's been a living, ongoing, organic creation over time, decades. And I'm playing with guys like Tim and a couple of the guys who've been playing in this world for decades. And so there's this rich background, this knowledge, this environment, you know? But the cool thing is that Rob has played in this world, you know, Majestic Wilderlands, for all these decades, and yet he's played under multiple different systems, you know? So he's played every system under the sun probably in this campaign. And no matter what, the world develops, right? So it doesn't matter what system he uses. So we're playing a 5e game now. It's fun. And it's Rob's modified version of 5e to make it fit with his world, and that's cool. And I'm still doing stupid shit and running into combat with my wizard, which is pretty much par for the course.
But to go back to Matt Jackson's comment about focusing on XP as a kid, we focused on XP until we said, oh, I played in somebody's campaign briefly where they did away with XP. It was generally you play a session with back then. Your sessions weren't like today. Your sessions today are what, 3 to 4 hours? Back then they were 5 to 8 hours, but
yeah,
you play a session and you leveled up. And yes, that changes the mentality or the mindset of why you are adventuring. When you are literally fiending for every XP, like, I don't know, a heroin addict about to go through withdrawal, and you realize that you need it so you can level up, and I need it. We're going to push on. Dude, I you know, the party is suffering. We're low on hit points. We got all our spells spent, but, you know, another good encounter or two with some good treasure. I think half the party's going to level up. We got to push on. Yeah, you got to roll those fucking dice. When you know that pushing on or not, you're going to level up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't fucking need to level up. So there is something for that. Also, when it came to the older editions, the assumption was, we are going to give you a lot of treasure. However, we are going to bleed you of your fucking money every opportunity that we get. And if you played 1E by the rules, leveling up, you generally didn't have the gold pieces to level up when you first leveled up. It's like, oh, I can be second level. Yeah, but it's going to cost you 2,000 gold pieces.
Because of the training costs. You guys did the training cost thing? We never did that.
We did that initially. But see, those are all built into the rules to drain out that the gold that was given out to give you XP to get you to the point that you could level. But it wasn't that. It was far from a perfect system.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was not. I mean, there was no sense of balance. After a while, you had so much fucking gold, you didn't know what to do with it. No matter how much you tried to drain them. You know, if the characters, I mean, Gygax assumed the characters were going to roll back into town and be like, you know, Pimp Daddy out there, you know, and with the Fritz Lieber's Fofford and the Grey Mauser style. You know, they roll into town with the 10,000 gold pieces and, you know, within 3 weeks, they're broke. But all the, you know, they're drunk, they're hungover, they got new stuff, they lost their stuff. All the girls at the bars are wearing new jewelry and new dresses, and they're like, where'd all my money go? I guess we got to go out and adventure again. But nobody played D&D like that. They're all trying to save up for our fucking castle, the fort, so we got our 78 followers, and you know what I mean, with halberds and short bows.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my players in my high school college group, they wanted to see how if hope we're not going to offend anybody, but based upon our listenership, I doubt it. Their characters would try to get laid by spending silver pieces in the bar, and it's like, it ain't going to happen. But we're famous. Nobody really cares about what you all are doing. You are famous in your own minds, regretfully. So now, second edition, try to change the XP dynamics and take it away from the idea of, you got to do, you know, you got to accumulate treasure and gold to level up, and turn it into, it's your actions, or your class specific actions. Fighters get experience points for fighting. You know, spellcasters get experience points for spellcasting. Yeah. Thieves for using thieving abilities.
So every thief started stealing from their group to maximize their goddamn XP.
Pretty much. Just give me all the gold because it'll help me level up.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, was that the solution? Probably not. So, but again, as the game got more complicated, as combat got more intricate, as you got more options built into the rules, as you started adding not just specialization, but then you started adding non-weapon proficiencies. Mm-hmm. And in third edition, you had proficiencies and feats. You had more fiddly bits that changed how combat was running, and now it became, well, if we do these big dungeons, the party's not going to get through it, right? And if you do a big dungeon and you do a something that's going to take them multiple sessions to get through, where they're going to level in between, they may outpower the dungeon that they are in. And that's something that we've seen in computer RPGs, that you start outpowering the area that you're in, or even MMOs, right? And say, oh, I still want to play this area, but I am too powerful for it. And now it's not going to give what I need or what I want.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes it's fun to run through those zones and kill the fucking guy who beat your ass when you were first level. I mean, EverQuest, those days, every once in a while, there was that guy in the desert. Ah, shit. My brother. Hey, who was that fucking guy in the desert that everybody went back to beat his ass because he killed them repeatedly when you were camping. If he popped, he killed your ass. And so people who are running through like 50th level on their way to somewhere else, they just stop by, camp them, beat the shit out of him and just keep on going just out of spite for all the times that he killed your ass. What was his name? What the hell? My brother's stinking right now. I know it.
I can picture it too. And
God,
yeah, cause you went to that zone. Cause the cave where you had the two zones like up, everybody mm-hmm. was always, that was the unofficial trading zone.
Yep. Yep. And everybody goes to the tunnel. Yeah. You go to the tunnel. Just outside the tunnel was that fucking desert area where that guy sat there. And he was way overpowered for that goddamn zone. But yeah, so you don't want to hang and kill orcs all day when you're 20th level. But at the same time, it's fun to go back and beat some ass and show how powerful you become. You know what I mean? Just out of revenge.
Derek Jones, I started playing around 81, 82. We never played to maximize XP by grabbing treasure and avoiding combat. We killed everything that moved and loved every minute of it. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and you could do that back then because the combats were quick.
Yeah,
Especially once you got rid of segments, combat went quick. When you were playing with segments, combat was not quick. Yeah. Combat was probably close to 5e length. But once we jettisoned segments from the game and just went by initiative, it played pretty quickly. And you could do large encounter combats. And sometimes we'd have four or five players and four or five henchmen. Versus, 20 drow or 20 drow. You say drow, I say drow. I've always said drow, but now I've heard it's drow. So
I heard it was drow, and I've always said drow. I don't know. Who the hell knows what the hell it is?
I'll defer to Rob Conley. So, Rob, tell us the proper pronunciation of the evil.
Well, Rob says Wilderlands, and I always thought it was Wilderlands. So who the hell knows? I mean, no one knows what the hell these things are called. But I know you're saying Fippy Darkpaw was the guy in Quainos. We're talking Quainos Hills. I'm talking that desert. Remember that guy in the fucking desert who came at you? All right. So anyway, let him think about that for a while. I agree with Rob. Milestone stuff, now I like that now. I never did back in the day. I never liked it. I thought it was stupid. I thought, you didn't earn it. I mean, the milestone was killing the guy and getting the gold. That's your milestone. Why should I give you 500 more XP for doing what you set out to do in the first place? But I kind of like it now. It's sort of like I look at it as finishing either a chapter or a section of a book or an entire book. If you finish a chapter, you get a few hundred. If you finish like a major, major segment of the book or a new book, you get a 1,000 or 2,000. Yeah, I think it makes sense. You know what I mean? It's like the end of a quest. I never liked it before, but I do now. I really do now.
Yeah. Well, and that isn't been, once second edition said, you can give XP out for more than just killing shit and taking their stuff.
Yeah.
Then I was like, all right, well, then I can give XP out for, all right, you made a funny in-game joke, not the out-of-character jokes, but the in-game jokes that are based upon what's going on at that moment and actually makes you laugh out loud. I would give some minor experience points bonuses for that. You did an action that was super heroic and you probably shouldn't have succeeded, let alone survived. Yes, yep. I'll give you a bonus for that. I always, encourage my players, even back then, to think out of the box.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it isn't necessarily the same. Dorne B. Din, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yes. Is
a dark elf in Northern Row.
North Row, that's what his fucking name was, Dorne. Everybody came to kill Dorne. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Everybody hated that guy. Son of a bitch. Anyway, I still hate him. He's my venom in my voice, as I say it now. Yeah, yeah.
Or, we can even look at EverQuest and EverQuest 2. I will always say that I had a lot more fun playing EverQuest, the original EverQuest, than I did playing EverQuest 2. I mean, EverQuest 2 with a new shiny, I got my character. Mm-hmm. Leveling there was so much easier. And I went back, and you can play it for free now. And I went back and installed it on my desktop right before Christmas, and I played it for like 2 or 3 weeks. Doing some solo stuff, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But that the original EverQuest, with its crappy graphics as it was, had better gameplay, in my opinion. The encounters were, for the most part, better thought out. And it and you didn't have Uber magic dropping left and right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which again is when you look at the newer editions of D&D, you get the Christmas tree effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, oh, I need shinies for all of my slots.
All the slot things. They did a good job in 5e with getting rid of the slot bullshit, because now you have to have a certain number of attunements you could have. Like the minor shit, you don't need to be attuned to, but anything of substantial power, you need an attunement. You only have like 3 attunement slots or something. I think they did a good job with that. You know, I've expanded upon it with house rules. I added attunement by blood, so that it only is attuned to you, and you could only have 2 blood attunements, so that nobody else could use it as magic. In other words, it has to be created specially for you. So you get 3 plus the 2 blood potentially, but again, it's only higher level because you need somebody to make something for you, another way to drain money. Then I have I call ancestral attunement, where I consider that you have to have the blood of 4 specific ancestors, a grandmother and grandfather on each side, their blood to create an item. Their kid couldn't even use it, but their grandkid could, and it's something that can be passed along like a family signet ring through a lineage, through a family line, only usable by a true descendant of those 4 people, which is a way to prove, yes, you are so-and-so of this house because the ring works for you. It glows, and therefore you're of the blood of the house. And so you get one of those, you know, sort of a little different way to do it, but it allows you to have more magic items in the 3 attunements, but only in specific circumstances, which will, you know, add to the flavor of the game and then everything else. Like, so it's, but I think overall they did a good job with magic items. A +1 dagger, no attunement needed. Some badass staff, definitely need attunement. You know, I think that's pretty cool. It just holds back the overpowered shit, you know?
All right. So Rob Conley, Heresy, Ultima Online forever until they nerf PvP combat. Listen, I tried playing Ultima, and my highlight of Ultima was chopping fucking wood, because
that's right.
The camping of noobs was rampant. And Rob, you'll appreciate this. I played Meridian 59.
Yes, I did that too.
And I actually played Sierra Online's The Realm.
I didn't do that one.
Oh yeah, that's another one that you could have probably effectively missed and not missed too much.
I upgraded Meridian 59 caused me to upgrade my 486. So yeah.
Well, I still remember with the original EverQuest when the first expansion came out, Kunark. Yeah. I was like, and it took like, I don't know, half a day to download that update on
14-port modem, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. You know, even after you install the update from the CD drive, then you had to patch the update. And when I patched the update, I couldn't play shit because I had to get a better graphic card. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, that was the game that blew up my computer, and I couldn't afford anything much better than that. So I couldn't. I think I did the first expansion. I don't think I did the second expansion, and then I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, I wasn't upgrading my computer that much. So yeah. But it was a fun game. I still want to get back into there one day, just on a fucking blowout of Saturday. You know what I mean? No. Log in, first level guy in fucking Freeport, and just go to town all day long. You know, that'd be fucking great, man. That'd be just great.
Wild Die Woodard, Train to the Zone.
Yes.
And listen, did I enjoy having to go back and loot my corpse, especially when I was in like Necro's Forest? No, I didn't enjoy that.
Begging for the spirit of the wolf so you could run faster than your enemies and get your shit before it evaporated into mist.
Yes. But you know what? That was an old school challenge and fun. And it, part of, and this is what your brother Mike brings up, EverQuest 2 was good until World of Warcraft came out, and then they care-bared EverQuest 2 to compete, and that is part of the issue. And I am going to say, and I'm sure there's going to be some people that are listening and go, fuck you, Tenka, that some of the issues with the later editions of D&D is that they care-bared the systems. I mean, how many ways have we put into 5e to keep your character from dying. Okay. I mean,
that saves. Yeah.
You know, yeah. You gotta fail 17 times in a row and then not have anybody around to staunch your wounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on, you know, is it better than having a campaign where everybody gets raised dead? Well, at least if somebody dies, you need to cast a raised dead. Guess what? You got to bring the body back. As I talked about on Easter Sunday, you know, raised dead requires the body to be returned. And if you're missing anything, like a hand, you're going to still be missing a hand when you get raised.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And then if you're still in the poison state, you're going to die instantly anyway. But raised dead is a perfect opportunity to, number one, drain resources, you know, gold. And number two, you burden the corpse, the person you brought back from the dead, you burden him with a quest or something like that. Because you know what? You weren't a follower of Sebastian the Great. But now Sebastian granted you this. I'll give the player a choice. Yeah, you can come back, but Sebastian the Great is the god of whatever the fuck, is giving you life back. He wants something in exchange. You were never a follower of him, and therefore, you know, here's the trade-off. And I'll give the player the choice. Back when I did Resurrection, I don't do it anymore. I don't like it. But you say you got to do this. You got to do X, Y, Z. And so you come back, and you got this Gaius on you that's basically unbreakable. And you become – it limits the guy in a certain way. Everything is devoted towards fulfilling the quest goal or something like that. So the player knows what they're in for when they come back because, you know, Sebastian the Great just laid upon this bullshit upon him. But, hey, at least you're back alive. You know, you might be down a level, but you're back alive.
You know, and – Your brother was also saying Dark Age of Camelot was great.
Pretty good. Yeah, that was a pretty good game.
It was pretty good, but you know, and again, back in that era when MMOs were coming out all over the place, City of Heroes, a blast until it wasn't a blast anymore. Then you had Warhammer played the Warhammer online game. Okay. Then I tried to get into, what was the one that you paid once? Guild Wars.
Guild Wars. I think we did recently. What was that one we did recently, Geek? What the hell was the name of that thing that we did? And we tried it and we played it for a while. We loved it and then we just hated it instantly. It was a few years ago. I forget what it was. A Guild Wars 2? Was that the name of it was? I thought that was a fun game and then it just wasn't, because you know why? People aren't playing them. That's the thing. People aren't playing them, and the only people who are playing them have the triple reincarnated in every level thing, and they have every Uber, whatever the fuck, because they've been playing since beta, and they know and have everything. And so, if you're going to play with them, you can't group with noobs, right? You can't learn the game and explore it because people are maximizing the game. They're only running through certain Avengers zones because they figured out the XP per second, right? Yep. That maximizes what they got to do. And that's like, for example, Dungeons & Dragons Online, DDO. That's the way that fucking game is. You can't find a group to do fun dungeons because it doesn't give the right XP per minute value that these people are looking for. And even if you do find them, let's say there's some guildmates and all that, there's no fun or risk anymore because you can't die because everybody's so fucking Uber, you know?
That was the problem. The problem with DDO, and to put things in perspective, DDO predates 4th edition. So, I mean, if you're going on, you're playing a game system that is pretty much third edition at its core, even though it uses spell points. But how many times can you run the same adventure, same dungeon, time and time again? You know where all the traps are. You know where everything. You know what's coming up. There's no excitement to it. And that's the problem of an MMO that does not have any kind of random content. Mm-hmm. Some of the outdoor encounter areas are random content, but they give no experience points for the adversarial risk that you're going to go through. Yeah. You're going to go through adventures to get the XP and to get the treasures. DDO, I had two main characters. One was a cleric fighter. He was similar to being like a paladin. And the other one was a bard. And bards, I think they finally nerfed it, but man, bards were overpowered at one point because you could just, between casting color spray and your different song effects. You could just shut everything down.
Yeah. And you like bards. I'm surprised you didn't like it, but you're a big bard fan. One of the few bard fans I know. You know, I've outlawed bards in 5e.
And here's the reason why I've liked bards ever since first edition, because I've never been, as a player, I don't want to be the individual that has to garner all of the accolades or the attention, but always be the hero. I want to be the unexpected hero. So yeah. When I was playing with Tim Conley in the face-to-face group out in Long Island for a while, I came into that group and I was like, I'm going to be a dwarven cleric. And there was one, he allowed me to be a dwarf. I'm like, that's fine. I'm going to be a dwarven cleric. Well, why cleric? Well, because clerics, in my experience, are an underappreciated class, but they've, you know, why I want to play cleric, I want to have a 17 strength. I'll have my strength higher than my wisdom because mm-hmm. I want to be able to be a frontline fighter when needed. Not necessarily going to be the big frontline fighter, but certainly step up and fill that role.
Yeah.
Bards, I enjoy because of their versatility. You can fight, you can cast spells, you can do some other stuff, but if they're the hero of the day, it's because the party just got fucked up and you needed the hero of the day. In DDO, they were overpowered for the longest time for compared to other classes for what they could do. I could solo most. I was soloing, like, what do they call them, party adventures, for the longest time because he could pretty much stun or fascinate everything and then cut through it. But then I think they nerfed that and started giving resistance against it, and then it's like, oh, all right, well, I can't do that so much anymore.
I was running through a DDO game a couple of years ago. I just wanted to just fuck around. You usually get around in the holidays. You get time off. It's one of those things. You have a Saturday afternoon or you're off from work and it's, you know, some holiday, whatever. This one, you know, me and my brother usually sometime in November around Thanksgiving, we'll log in, resubscribe for a month and we'll play a couple of days and we realize we hate it. But it was a couple of years ago we did that. And I remember I'm running through in a dungeon. I grouped with a guy. He was like, you know, triple reincarnated, whatever, in every class and super this. And he was a mishmash of various classes running through with super everything. And he was like a wizard, squishy little bullshit class, right? Mixed with a couple other squishy bullshit classes, you know? And I'm just trying to stay alive. And this guy's running through like a god of war. It's like I'm playing like freaking Black Widow and he's like Thor running through there. And you know what I mean? It's like, what in the hell is this? What in the hell is this? I mean, it was so obvious that like a regular guy who just wants to fuck around and play and grab a group, it's not welcome in DDO anymore. And I don't know, does any MMORPGs out there, are there? I mean, is there anything good on the horizon? I keep hearing about various ones that are coming out soon and they never do for like 10 years and then they run out of funding and nothing happens, right? I mean, what's coming out?
Well, you know, listen, since we're talking about editions of D&D, and now we're talking about editions different MMOs, remember, 4th edition was going to be the design behind 4th edition, besides taking away the OGL by redefining it as a game system license.
Yeah.
Besides doing that, the idea was microtransactions. That was a time when MMOs were going from pure subscription-based games to now it's like, oh, we can probably get more players and a better base and potentially make more money by doing microtransactions, right?
Yeah.
Like,
pay
for your bonuses, pay for this, pay for that. Yeah. So integral to 4th edition was the idea that they were going to do their own VTT. Mm-hmm. And the VTT was going to be supported by buying virtual tokens.
God, or virtual
miniatures. Well, I remember it because of the homicide-suicide that took down the VTT in question there. But it had a bit history anyway because the graphics that they used for the animated dice was a little steal from Fantasy Grounds at the time, which wouldn't have the animated dice. So, but that was, again, MMOs were inspired by D&D. And then D&D got inspired by things like fucking Warcraft, mm-hmm. and these fucking RPGs you're playing on your phone because that's where the money was. It was going to be a constant income stream, and that's something that people don't always realize why were MMOs such a big, huge thing for these companies, because it wasn't just pay you $39 or $49 for the game. You were paying $10, $15 a month, which is why, for the most part, you generally didn't subscribe to more than one or two.
Yeah, who could afford it back then anyway? We're all broke. You know,
I mean, the one MMO that never had really great graphics, but was I always had a lot of fun with was Anarchy Online, which was science fiction in a weird freaking world. But Anarchy had random, basically random dungeons that you would go through. So you always you get a mission, and if you completed it, you got a certain reward, and you were trying to match up rewards to your class, and maybe upgrade your weapon or whatever. That was I was always playing one game plus Anarchy. Mm-hmm. And now I haven't found, so I went back to EverQuest 2 for maybe 2 weeks. Like my old gaming group, and it's mostly my face-to-face group and some friends that are in Texas on the West Coast that we met through that original EverQuest group. They still play some MMOs, but they're also it's also the same group of friends of mine that are always like, "Oh, we want Eric to GM. We want you to DM again." All right, I'm happy to DM my old gaming group. That's great. So when are we gonna do this? We want to do it like EverQuest. I mean, like EverQuest. Like, well, we all agree. Like, oh yeah, let's get on in like half an hour. No, fuck you. I can't do that. You play an MMO, you don't get on for an hour, and that's fine. I can't do that if I'm going to run a game session. Yeah. I need to prep. I can't be on call. DM does not work in my world.
It's not fun either. That's not a fun thing. I'd rather develop. One shots are fine for like a convention or something. That's what they're there for. But if I'm going to run a game, I want it to be part of a campaign that means something that's more developed. You know, that's the fun part for me as a DM. You know, I'll tell you what, the one thing I'll ever forgive EverQuest and all those fucking games for is what they did to the thief. They called him a fucking rogue, and Thief used to be the guy who did traps and snuck ahead and blah, 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 pickpockets and did a backstab only if he was hiding and had surprise. But now they made him a rogue because Thief wasn't politically correct, and Rogue gave you the ability to be, I don't know, Han Solo-y, but it gave you the ability to fight in combat as long as, you know, you can do a never-ending backstabs. It just, I don't like that. I still don't like that to this day. I like the classes to be separate. And so I blame MMOs for, I want to play a rogue and stab someone in the back in combat 400 times and do a million hit points of damage. Why couldn't the fighter do that? He's a motherfucker who's trained in fighting his entire goddamn life. He can't do that, but you can, you squishy little bastard. You know, no, that's why I blame all those games for. I like standard defined classes. In my RPGs, you know, like the big three, the fighter, the thief, and the sorcerer / wizard / whatever the hell. I don't even like clerics. I just like those three, you know.
Rob Conley, Neverwinter Nights was the best 3X CRPG and multiplayer was a blast. You could actually log into, people could run servers. And you. My problem with the servers were that pretty much most servers were dead. You'd log in, you were the only person logging in, and you couldn't find adventure for shit. But the concept was there. I'd love to see that taken to it. Now, I know there was a recent Neverwinter Nights for 5th edition. I own it. I tried it, and I liked the idea that you could run it as a DM, but it didn't really look like you could run it very well as an actual 5e or any edition type of game. You were kind of like the Wizard of Oz behind a virtual screen, like moving stuff on it. Yeah, I'd have to check it out. There's supposed to be a 5e powered RPG that's coming out. I think it might even be out, but it's only for PCs, and I'm on a Mac, so.
But Polara? You're saying it was a 5e powered what, like a MMO or it's just a CRPG?
It's a CRPG, but I think you might be able to play with multiple players, like log your group in, which would be interesting. Yeah, I mean that might be fun. The illusion of roleplay is broken because of the farming nature of the content. Brian McIntosh. Well, you know that City Heroes was a lot of fun, but when everything about City of Heroes is pretty much walking around the block and kicking ass or getting your ass kicked or whatever. It gets old after a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then they came out with Champions after they bought the trademark Champions. And that was not even as good as City of Heroes, which was sad. So,
before I had kids, I had 3 Star Wars accounts, $45 a month. Yeah, all the kids come along, and that's the end of that. Now he's got 4 kids, and boom.
Oh yeah,
formula diapers.
You know, I had a lot of friends that would multi-box EverQuest 2.
Yeah,
they would have 2 accounts running. And listen, it was a struggle enough for me to run 1 account, and my big eye opener with EverQuest 2 was I used to I'm not going to call them cheat forums, but you read the forums, which are fine, like little exploits in the games, and there was EverQuest 2 exploit for vending. And there was a way that you could get, like, you didn't have to actually harvest. You could buy harvest material and then get credit for doing the harvesting. And then there was a vending of the stuff that you bought. And it was a way to make gold hand over fist for a couple of months. The only problem at that point, though, was with EverQuest 2, the great game design was you had to be logged in to vend.
So
what would I do? I'd get up in the morning before going to work, log into EverQuest, log myself into vend, and go to work. And that went on. And I think I did that for like 2 months, and then I got my first electric bill.
Yeah.
And apparently having your computer logged in and on and running certainly taxes your electric bill. So I was like, well, that fucking sucks.
I remember the early internet, we had to pay about a minute, about the hour. I had the Netcom, right? And all those other kind of companies. And I mean, I got a bill one time. It was in the hundreds of dollars. I mean, I had a heart attack. I'm like, Jesus Christ. It was like 2 car payments or something. I'm like, what the fuck? How? You know? And it's like, it's back in the old days when it was like, text, you know, the web wasn't even a thing. The web, I remember the first time I ever got on the goddamn web, it was I went on those like school's website, and I literally couldn't go any further. I clicked all the links that they had, and I clicked every link on every other site. I finished my access point. I finished the fucking World Wide Web, and I'm like, this is stupid. I said, this will never last. I'm going back to FTP. That was the end of that. See how prescient I am.
Well, here's the thing. I still remember my problem with AOL is that I had Windows, I guess, 3.1. And AOL Windows worked fine until my girlfriend at the time bought me my first CD-ROM drive. I installed the CD-ROM drive, and there was an IRQ or ICQ conflict. And I couldn't get AOL to operate. But I could get AOL to operate if I used Geos, which, I mean, what the hell is Geos? Geos is just another bullshit operating system that you could run aside from Windows. But the Geos version would work for AOL. And if you went to the Members Helping Members community, and I forget how I figured this out. I think I stumbled into it. Because Members Helping Members wasn't billed against your billable time on AOL. Okay. Wasn't against your 5 hours.
Yeah.
And about 1 out of 10 times when you left Members Helping Members, your clock would not restart. And you knew whether your clock restarted or not.
Yeah.
So I would go in and out until my clock didn't restart.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, my clock didn't start. And I tried it out. So it was like having AOL Unlimited. That lasted for about like 6 or 7 months before they caught on, and I guess they fixed that bug. But at the same time, then AOL went to like 20 hours a month for your monthly fee, and then it wasn't as bad. But yeah.
God.
Solaster is the RPG, is the SRD. It emulates 5e very well, but it's still in early access. All right. No OS X version yet, and I don't think it works on crossover yet. I haven't found. Yeah. I would give it a try.
Too much porn, Joe. No, it wasn't even. I mean, how hard it was to get porn in fucking 1998 on an FTP server? Mother of God. Don't get me wrong. I tried. But mother of God, it was hard. You had to put together, you had to have special programs because the pictures they posted somewhere were, they were so big. They were in like 10 different file formats. You had to crunch them together. It was like, and then you get a picture of like some disgusting ass thing. And so you couldn't even preview. Oh my God, it was terrible. Like, it wasn't even worth it.
Well, and here's it's like the strip poker games from back then were so pixelated. It's like, I think I'm playing against a woman. I'm not 100% sure, but if I use my imagination, I can certainly pretend that I'm playing against a member of the opposite sex. We shall see. And back in those days, like, you know, going to Usenet to try to download any kind of file. I mean, what did you hit Usenet for usually? You hit it for two things. You hit it for gaming material.
D&D, totally. I downloaded a lot of shit from there, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that was my, I think I played Neverwinter Nights on AOL for like 45 minutes, and I was like, oh, wow, this is the Gold Box. I played the shit out of the Gold Box games on my Commodore 64. Mm. However, I wasn't really anxious about paying, what was it, like $5 an hour, $10 an hour to play Gold Box game. It's like, yeah, no. And when AOL went to 20 hours a month, then they did away with the Gold Box game.
Yeah. You remember those, Rob's talking about, he would dial Illuminati online in Austin, hit some sites with FTP, go for FTP, output, save the output, disconnect, see what files had, and log back in. Yeah, that's what you had to do. You had to just download the readme file or the text file that had the file list, and then, yeah, you save your fucking money, man. Do you remember the you dial up somebody else's computer? It was that, what the hell did they call that? Where they had their own little setup. You had a program that was running basically a whole setup on their computer, and you would log in your modem to their modem, and then you'd be in there. And often they had an upload download ratio you'd have to do basically. And then you know, if you wanted something, you'd upload X things and the download X things and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Those are fun. Those are fun times, man.
All right. So your brother, Michael, some company is making the original Temple of Elemental Evil for 5e. How do we think it will play out? It's not some company. It's Goodman Games, and they're doing it in their, what is it, OE or Original Edition
Retro? Yeah, it'll be number, it's coming out number 6, I think. It's going to be the next book. I have 1 through 5, and they're all excellent. And it's going to be a 2-volume set, I think a slipcase, 2-volume set. And so what they do is they publish the first, they publish the Temple, you know, in there, the original ones. They usually have commentators. They have people writing about their experiences in Temple. They have all these people just, you know, giving thoughts or insights. That's the original one. I'm sure they're probably going to have Frank Mensah talk about something, you know, related to it. I would hope. My God, I mean, the guy fucking wrote it. You know, Gygax's idea, but Frank put it in. And then they're going to put a 5e conversion for it. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to give it a shot because that was my favorite. Everybody has their adventure. That was their thing. A lot of people older than me started earlier than me. It's those Keep on the Borderlands and you know, Isle of Dread, Expedition to Barrier Peaks, all those ones. But for me, it was Temple. That was really it wasn't my first, but it was the thing that stuck as this is what D&D is to me. So I'm totally looking forward to Temple, you know? Bulletin boards. That's right. Bulletin boards. You're right. Bulletin board systems. Yes. Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, like Temple is the one that I ran multiple times. It's the one, my go-to. It's like, oh, new group, we're playing through Temple.
Exactly. And
I my copy was written in and erased and written and erased and written and erased. Mm-hmm. It's dog ear to all shit. Yep. I would call it to my eyes, because again, it's multiple sessions. It's larger. It covers levels 1 through 8. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a mega dungeon. But I've heard, no, you can complete it. Therefore, it's not a mega dungeon. So the argument is there. We've had that argument. I've had that argument with Bad Mike. So,
you know, here's the thing about the Temple was in 3rd edition, they decided they're going to do return to Temple of Elemental Evil, right? And now this is where I realized that it just broke, because this is where I came to hate the mega dungeon, because this thing, first of all, you were able to move a level up a lot faster in 3rd, right? I don't know if it's 3rd or 3rd 3.5, whatever hell the favorite edition was at the time. But they had this adventure that was like a hole in the ground, sort of like a spoke, like a wheel, like a big wheel, right? And you're running through the inner tube of a wheel and you're doing various things, and it was tied to there was no relation to the original temple. You know what I mean? There was no tie-in or anything. So it wasn't even like you're going back to that at all. But not really, you know, there was some
bullshit right
there. But the adventure was such that it was you'd go in at level one, and there were so many it was big, and there were places to sit down and rest and recuperate, and you could essentially go in at level one and then 3 weeks later come out at level eight. And I'm like, this is the stupidest fucking thing ever. You're moving up levels so quick. You don't ever have really, because of the rule system, the way it was set up, you'd have to go back to a town or resupply. There was never training times that's the only good thing about training is that it took time, right? But you have to go supply or anything like that. You could live off the land, like guerrilla warfare style in there. And then you'd level up to eighth level and you've never done anything but that. And you come out of it a badass eighth level guy, never having done anything, walk around in inner tube and kill shit and take their stuff. It just, that was when I was like, God, this sucks. The system sucks. The design concepts suck. Everything about third edition sucks. And that's when I gave up, I think, right around there on the whole thing, you know?
Well, and that's, you know, sad, man, because Temple is classic. And, being that T1 Temple, the Village of Hamlet, is so iconic that you would think that they would be able to do a decent version of it. But a lot of the third edition reimaginings of classic adventures kind of didn't do so well, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. They never did it well. It's a certain style of design for the game. I think they adopted this a system of encounter design. Like, I think in fourth edition, and they carried it over later third, and then they carried it over to fourth rather. And it was just all encounter based. It wasn't, not that I want to say story based, because I don't want a story game and the concept of a story game, but there was no tying together anything. It was just like you go from here, you go from here, and they give you the encounter map, and their adventures were a series of encounter maps, right? That's all right. It was. That's all it was a series of encounter maps that eventually, once you beat all the encounters in the book, you were done, but there was no bigger picture or anything. There was no tying it together. It was just like, okay, since you made it from this place to that place in the valley, give them this encounter map. What? What? You know, it was, God damn, man. No, it was sucky.
How sucky was it? Tell me how you really feel.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it'll be able to modify too much. It's easy to do. You know, it's easy to modify that thing, to make it 5e. I wonder what they're going to do with the clerics of the various elementals. I love the powers.
The different factions and all that stuff. You know, it's going to be... I will give Goodman Games a lot of credit for this. When they do these original adventures reincarnated, I think I got it right. I think David put it into the chat.
Yeah.
They do a very good job of reimagining the classic stuff as a viable 5e alternative.
Yeah,
it is, even if that means rewriting aspects of it or fleshing out stuff, a lot of times... You know, the earlier stuff wasn't as detailed as some of us nowadays might wish or might want.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did a conversion for the clerics because I converted in my head at one point for a 5e game of Temple. And I realized that I have to have clerics of special, you know, you have the cleric of the war thing, the cleric of the life class, and the cleric of the whatever the nature class. I figured, let me do four elemental things for each of the four elements. And so I put that together and I did it under the same 5e structure. And I thought it was pretty good. You know, I thought they were pretty decent. I'm curious because I would imagine that Goodman's going to have to do something similar because you're not going to just have a generic cleric. It's going to be a fire cleric, an air cleric, war order, blah, blah, blah. So I would imagine you can do something similar. So I'm curious how what I did matches what he did in terms of the different abilities or spells and things like that that you could do at higher levels, you know? I'm curious how he's going to come out. I'm interested to see if we, you know, think alike. I mean, he's a smart guy. He does good shit. You know, I don't like his DCC stuff, but, you know, That's just my flavor, you know. I just like the type of game I like to play, right? So
right,
yeah.
Well, I mean, and here's the thing, and I think you'll agree with me on this: the DCC adventures are great. It's the system that's a bit wonky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could take a DCC adventure, use it anywhere, right? I mean, yeah.
I mean, just, you know, it's going to have a certain level of crazy, but even even the adventures that were written for 3X by Goodman during the original Dungeon Crawl Classics, before there was a Dungeon Crawl Classics RPG, even those adventures were a bit wacky, a bit on the wacky side. Yeah. And they also converted very easily to OSR play.
Yeah, yeah. We'll say John Miller's got to go. Take care, John. Have a good night, man.
Yep. John, be good. Doom Bunny. Johnny said
be good. Johnny be good. Isn't that a song? Yes. Chuck Berry.
Don't take me to start singing because you wouldn't want me to sing. Doom Bunny. I'm running Temple of Evil with Castles and Crusades. T1 is so good to this day. T1 is, in a lot of ways, it's like the B2 for AD&D.
Absolutely. Good way to say it.
Well, yeah, it's that classic that you go back to, and I enjoy Temple, but I'm just happy to be playing with T1, and I'm listen, do I buy all of the Goodman reincarnated versions? Yes, you don't just get and it's like yes, I already have the original version, or one of the original versions, like in the case like B2, it's like well we got the. You know, we're going to offer all like 8 different printings of B2. It's like, okay, then. Happy, happy.
Yeah.
But, and I will say, just as a side note, I think B1 and not B1, I guess the first and second in the series of the Reincarnated Adventures,
mm-hmm.
The paper was very thin.
Thin, yeah, it was.
Yeah, there was bleed through. Yeah. And I had heard rumors at a GaryCon early on in my attending of GaryCon that while Wizards was very happy with the final results as it went to content, they weren't thrilled with the presentation. So yeah. I guess, again, when you're doing this stuff, you're pinching every penny.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you're what is it? Penny wise and pound foolish. But if you don't want to pay full boat for this stuff, you can usually get it on Amazon for roughly a 25% discount.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a bad way to get these. The problem is these books are fucking huge, so they took up a lot of room.
They'll stop a bullet. Those books are fucking big, man. You know, John. What was it that John is asking? Do you use CR, replace use CR for HD. You know, there's one thing for the combat rating or fifth edition. I don't use it. I never looked at it. I don't even know what it is. I wouldn't know how it worked. You know, I just spitball it, right? And it's because I don't care about balance that much. And every group plays differently. Even
heretic.
Yeah, I know. A group of four players, each you give two different groups the same exact characters. And they'd play the combat completely different, where one group of players would have the characters have a TPK and the other group has an easy victory. So that just throws CR right out the fucking window. Who cares? I mean, it's a group-specific thing. So once you know your group and how they play, I just spitball it. And sometimes, because I don't care about balance, sometimes it's too tough and they run. Sometimes they vanquish them easy. And sometimes it gets hairy when I didn't think it would, right? But I just kind of spitball. I never use CR. I don't use it as an indicator for anything. I don't think I even understand how it would work. I'd have to read it and see how it works, you know? But yeah, I don't do the thing. Rob, do you use CR? We're asking Rob in a group because we're doing this 5e game. Do you use CR at all? Or do you just kind of, you know, just wing it? I would imagine after 30 or 40 years, he's just winging this shit, I guess. Right?
I mean, listen, even Swords and Wizardry uses a CL, which I guess is a challenge level.
Or something, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when I design creatures for Swords and Wizardry, I just kind of go through the creature book and, you know, and go, all right, well, what kind of sort of looks like it? I'm not going to crunch numbers to figure out, is this the right CL? Let me just see what, because CL just gives you your experience point value.
Mm-hmm.
So I just find something. Yeah, this looks relatively similar in power.
CR
is a guideline. That's your brother, and I'm going to say your brother is talking out of his ass. There's no such thing as a guideline in 5e. So
Now there are actually they do say certain things are guidelines. It's not like third edition where everything was that you must do because the players yell at you if he didn't do it, God forbid. You know, he does the encounter builder gets a baseline then modified as I gain experience. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I never did the encounter builder. I just kind of started with Phandalin, and which had kind of like decently balanced encounters, I think, to give the DM and the players a sense of what 5e is all about, right? And so you had the goblins, you had the fucking the bugbear thing in the fight there, and a couple of wolves. And it sort of gave me a guideline as to, all right, this is what a group of this many people could do. These are the basic level monsters. And it was fun, right? It was a fun thing. Right. And for my money, Phandalin, I think Rob agrees with me, Phandalin is the best adventure ever put out, starter adventure ever in any AD&D or D&D game ever. And since D&D's been around, I think Rob has pretty much said the same thing.
Interesting.
You know, so, yeah, if Phandalin, that whole Phandalin adventure that came in the starter set, not the encounters thing. Someday they should fucking combine the encounters box set and the starter set into one goddamn thing because perfect. Together, perfect. But the Phandalin adventure was the best thing they ever came out with. It was just the perfect thing. It reminds me of the Moat House. And I dare say, heresy here, I think it's better than the Moat House. I think it's the best entry level game ever. Did you ever play it, Eric? You ever do it?
What, 5e?
No, Phandalin encounter. The whole Phandalin thing from the starter set. You ever done that one?
No, because I don't have 5e. I'll probably own it.
Yeah,
But have I done more than give it a cursory glance? No, yeah. I mean, and it's not saying I'm not sure it's not great stuff, but my investment in 5e was, oh, I'll get all the starter boxes because, you know, maybe my niece will want it at some point.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say something that for me sounds like heresy, but one of the best products I think ever released for an RPG was the Pathfinder Beginner Box.
Really?
That, oh my God. That box, it presented Pathfinder in a way that somebody like me, an old grognard who doesn't want to see new shit, was like, oh my God, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And it didn't overwhelm you. It allowed you to actually level, but not only that, it gave you tools, physical tools, pogs, you know, counters and stuff that you could use with any game, any session. I was like, the value here is beyond the value that was placed on that box, and it was a great way if you're going to introduce somebody to getting a tactile feel of an RPG and going, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. I think that was great. Now, they've never followed up. I would have said have a beginner box and an expert box, and that would have been a whole new product line. But of course, they don't want to go that route. But I would, if they came out with one for Pathfinder 2, I'd have to buy it. And I haven't touched anything with Pathfinder 2, but I'd have to look at it because they did such a great job with the first one.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Rob, that's right. It's called I call it Phandalin because it's the city, everything, or the town or village, everything is based in. But it's called Lost Mines of Phandelver. Yeah, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. You know, it's just if you combine, like Rob said, you combine the Lost Mines of Phandelver from the starter set with the stuff about the region from the encounters stuff, you're golden. That's you have many, many dozens of hours of play out of that, and everybody will have a good time. You know, I could I've set my entire campaign in there, and they've expanded ever since, but that's still home, you know, and that gives you that home feeling, just like Hamlet does. Gives you that feeling like, Hamlet, I know those people. That's where I drink. This is my people. You know what I mean? It's like Cheers, bar, you know, it's like that kind of thing.
Greg, CR isn't bad in theory. It's bad in practice. It encourages DMs to design things so the players are consistently running into encounters they can handle. So the players start to assume they will win.
Yeah, good point. And then they get butthurt when they don't. Yeah, it's true. They get butthurt when they don't win. And then you get the expectations are wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's see. 5e bloats hit points of higher level HD could do more damage in ways. That's true. They do. I mean, they... 5e, your average 5e goblin could do more than just fling a sling stone at you. You know what I mean? He hops around like Yoda, you know, with his lightsaber in hand. And he just, they jump around like Mexican jumping beans. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So you throw some more bodies and reduce some bodies and you just go with it, man. But once you get a feel of it, you'll see how it works. You know, once you get a feel of it, you see it'll be good. It'll be good. Try it. I guarantee you'll love the starter set, Lost Mines of Phandelver. I guarantee it if you haven't done it yet. I wish they would put it out in one book. I wish they would combine both things into one book. You know, yeah, you haven't been there forever, my brother says. It's true. Someday you'll go back.
You shall return.
Yeah. Man, so, listen, man, I have my second shot appointment tomorrow.
Yep.
So bright and early. So we're going to end a little sooner probably tonight in a little bit. Just want to give everybody a heads up. So I want to get to bed early and get ready. I got to get up at the gas crack at dawn for this damn thing. But
you got to look sexy for your COVID shot.
I just don't want to miss it. No, you know what I mean? It's too hard to get these fucking appointments, man. It's too hard to get these, you know, these appointments.
Believe me, dude. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're opening it up to the full population, but it also everybody's going for the same handful of appointments you can stand into. Folks, yeah. I want to make a few friendly announcements. First off, if you look at the bottom of the screen, we got the voicemail number 347-509-5168. You can leave a voicemail for Joe and I. We'll play it back in 2 weeks when we do this again. Totally. Or I might even address it sooner, but we'll definitely play it back. So that is our Google number. I think the limit to a voicemail is like 3 minutes or something like that. It's a great tool. Feel free to use it.
Yeah.
Addition to that, we have about 365 subscribers on the YouTube channel. Now, I announced this on Wednesday when I was with Bad Mike. I'm going to say this again here. When we hit 500 subscribers, I'm going to do a special Talking Crit with Bad Mike and maybe Joe and Glenn. Yeah. We will give away $500 in drive-through RPG gift certificates. Probably a $1 $250, $1 $150, and $1 $100. It's not a contest. It's gifts. It's the community's money anyway. This is from my affiliate sales. I like to give it back to the community. So it's a great way to do it. And I think 500 would be a nice little milestone, right? We'll talk about earlier. It'll be a nice milestone there.
Yeah. What did we start? When we started doing this, you know, about 200 people or something like that?
When we started doing the Iron Rations, we were around 200.
Yeah, now we're at 360-some. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, 365, man. It's all because, listen, folks, we don't do this for money. Obviously, we're not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
We do it because we enjoy it and because we love giving back to the community that's given us so much over the years. So
yeah. Yeah, although if we hit 1,000 members, I guess you could tip us, right? So that's like throwing a dollar bill at a whore or a stripper. You know what I mean?
Yes, throw
that dollar out there. I'm not taking my clothes off for you guys, but, you know.
And just remember, all the whores affiliated with our different live streams, whether it's myself, Glenn, Mike, or Joe, none of us are lightweight, so you wouldn't want us playing strip poker with you.
No. It's not a matter of putting a dollar bill in my G-string. It's a matter of finding a roll of fat to stick it in. So trust me,
you're
pretty, you know?
you're not doing it for the sexiness.
No. I'm not getting on no pole for you guys, but, you know, throw dollars in, and I'm sure Eric will throw them back at you in some way like he's doing right now. So that's pretty cool, man.
Tim. Tim. You gotta role play what you know.
You know, there's a funny little quick story before we go on that one. We're doing something with Forgotten Realms in my brother's game, and we got something coming up actually tomorrow night where they're going to Silvery Moon. Now I converted what Silvery Moon was, and you know, this stupid elf like thing, Atlantis style, whatever, Galadriel run place. I said, no, it's more like it's in the middle of a mining area. It's more like Pittsburgh than anything else. It's like Pittsburgh in like 1800, maybe where ore goes there and manufacturing comes out or something like that. So sitting here today, like, you know what? I kind of wonder what the hell Pittsburgh looked like back then. I know it was on a river and shit. So I found this old freaking map of Pittsburgh. Type in the Google Pittsburgh 1795. You'll find this amazing map. And I wanted to download a high res version. Matt Jackson was able to help me get it off the site. So I'm looking at the map and look at the names of the street, you know, Irvine Street, St. Clair Street, Liberty Street, blah, blah, blah. And then you got Virgin Alley, V-I-R-G-I-N. I'm like, Virgin Alley. That's where the whorehouses are going to be.
There you go.
Perfect. Perfect. So, yeah.
The red light district for those of you that are
fighting along. The whorehouse area is Virgin Alley. Oh, man. Kingdom of Kaldor.
There's a Horn Kickstarter going out for the Kingdom of Kaldor. And I was never a fan of the Harn Master game system, but the setting itself is very well done.
Yeah,
so there's a killer deal apparently for a buck. So
yeah,
certainly give it a peek. Other deals out there. Tome of Adventure Design is on sale for half off, I believe, through the end of the weekend or maybe midweek next week over a drive-thru. That's nice. Matt Finch's great resource for designing adventures.
Nice. Yeah,
great thing to check out. And, oh, my God. God, there's a quick start for Open Quest 2, but it's not on drive-thru. It's actually at the company's website. And I'll be damned if I can remember the name of the company. But Open Quest is your SRD OGL version of the basic RPG / RuneQuest / Call of Cthulhu rules. And it is spot on. I was a Kickstarter backer. Newport is the author, and the Quickstarter is free. So if you can grab it, grab it.
That's cool. That's cool. Good deal.
And yeah, and if you're listening, are you watching? You're not subscribed yet? Subscribe, like the episode, comment. Even after we go off the air, it all helps with the algorithms on the YouTubes.
Yeah, it's all about the algorithms, right? You got to get our people. Yeah. Once we hit a critical mass, it's going to snowball, man. You know.
Yes, and we promise we will not remove our clothes when we hit that critical mass.
Ever.
Yes,
that's a whole different kind of critical mass you all don't want to
see. Yeah, we'll bring James Spahn on for that if we need to get somebody who's willing to go topless when carrying around some extra weight.
Matt Jackson likes to walk around his tighty whities, so you know.
Well, then that's just offensive. That's offensive no matter what. All right.
Because I realized before we logged off, we hadn't busted Matt Jackson's balls, and every single YouTube show we do has to at least bust his balls once.
Yes,
there you go, Matt.
At least once. Matt, it's like being active military once again. What can we tell you, right? folks? Like Joe said, he's going for his COVID shot in the morning. It's the reason why we're cutting this a little short. We're not medical professionals. We are taking actions to protect ourselves, our loved ones, our family, our community. You know what actions you need to take to protect yourself, because you can't protect others without protecting yourself first, right? So use your common sense. Make the decisions that you need to make. Be safe, be well. God bless. Knock on wood. I'll be back again tomorrow with Rach for the Gamer's Health live stream. And I will talk with you all later, and Joe and I will be back in 2 weeks.
Yep. Thanks very much, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Be good. And we're out, maybe. I think we're probably out. Yeah. I don't know. I've been late. Did it tell you on your side that we're out? Because my side.
No, looks like we're still live here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We're still live. Yes. Who the hell knows, man?
Oh, God. Yeah. I was.